Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach R. Skadden coming to you live from North Carolina on this beautiful Monday in May as we enter into the new month, breaking into the new season and the new place that the Lord has prepared for us after a much needed month of being in a wilderness place with the Lord, even though the fight still raged on during the month. Standing on the wall and praying for the Office of the President and what's going on in our lives. Want to today, as we enter into this new month of AR and this month of heightened, prophetically, what we understand of a heightened place of warfare, of continuing to spend time with the Lord and making sure we're preparing ourselves for each day. And understand, to help us understand what seasons we are in currently and in the future. And so today I want to continue our study of the Reordering Our Day book by Chuck Pierce. And we're coming towards the end of our study of the Midnight Watch, end of the day, the Evening Watch, and looking at what to do in these prayer times, if this is the one the Lord has called you to walk out. And today's chapter and verse I really want to highlight is Luke 24. And there are some things throughout this that as Jesus was resurrected, and it's the story of the resurrection and the road to Emmaus, where Jesus encountered some of the disciples, showed them his hands, spoke to him and taught him them some things. And then the things he said before, just kind of like the veil was dropped from their eyes. They finally started to understand what he has been saying the whole time. And so we see towards the end of the chapter, they're approaching evening. Jesus was on his way. He was going to go on the road, but the disciples ended up asking him, you know, to come in and wanting him to eat. But before that, they were in verse, if you look at verse 36 through 42, they had an encounter where he showed him his hands and feet. And then they were in such amazement and joy that they wanted to spend some time with him. But then in verse 44, where I want to look at, and I'll pull this up here, is we see here, and Jesus says, "Now he said to them, these are my words which I spoke to you, and while I was still with you, that all these things which are written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled." And he talked about that, how he didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. So you're seeing this again. He's telling this again. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. And as we break into this new, we want to spend this time with the Lord. And they had done that through communion, through breaking bread, through a meal. And then he goes on to say in verse 36, "Thus it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise again from the dead the third day, and that repentance for forgiveness of sins would be proclaimed in his name to all the nations, beginning from Jerusalem. You are witnesses of these things, and behold, I am sending you forth the promise of my Father upon you, but you are to stay in the city until you are clothed with power from on high." Then we get into Acts, the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, the outpouring, Pentecost, et cetera there. But focusing on, then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. And sometimes, you know, talked about it a little bit last week, God will hold things back. He didn't really say too much more. I mean, Luke 24 talks about how he went through the scriptures, the prophets, and really told him the same things over again. But it just something popped. He opened their minds. And so with that, we want to, in this season, make sure we're taking communion during this time, that evening watch, and asking the Lord to bring us into a new place of seeing him. Ask for the veils to be removed as we enter into each day. And as we get in this, that's why it's so important to take communion and to remember the sacrifice that the Lord made, so that we can walk out each and every day. And part of the reason we want to go through this is because, you know, there's all these things and business coaches and that stuff's not wrong and bad. But for me, when I went through that stuff, there was something lacking. As a believer, it's like there's something more there of, okay, I can do the quote unquote right thing that man says, but it just, for me, it was not fruitless all in all. It was just, there was something missing. There was that relationship with the Lord that was ultimately missing. And when I first read this book a couple years ago, it's just like the veil dropped of like, oh wow, okay. Yes, that stuff is good and right. You want to do some things, but at the end of the day, it's still that relationship with the Lord that's the most important, to make sure you understand the times and seasons. Because if you're doing it based on your own natural will, you could be completely out of the timing of the Lord. But when you're in that communion place with the Lord, you're walking with him, then your steps start to align, and you can really have a peace of being able to walk out as we are, say, in this season, where wars and rumors of wars are abound, but yet still have the knowledge and understanding of where to take the next step and when to take the next step and if you should take the next step and et cetera. So with that, I digress, and we want to look at this week ahead. A whole host of cultural news happening this week, and some political news, but we're going to see this week some things pop off that we've been discussing a little bit and praying about a lot lately. But the focus is coming more as the battle increases for budgetary issues. The Fed will potentially release numbers, and I'll get to that here in a second. But first, we want to a short update on Ukraine and Russia. So there's this big political debate going on in the news around the world of whether May 9th will be a relevant day for Russia. You have British UK Defense Secretary Ben Wallace, who has been on top of things as far as information on the ground in Ukraine involving Russia, coming out and warning the world that Putin and the Russians could potentially launch the next world war via nuclear warfare in Ukraine. There are rumors out of Ukraine that Russia is attacking certain military bases that and routes that the United States and EU have started to send weapons to in and near the city of Odessa, Ukraine. And that right there is the key talking point that Putin and the Russian military officials have been highlighting, is if these countries continue to aid, provide weapons and enemy, they're considering that an act of war, and they're going to eventually start acting on it. And it looks like right now that they are. And so we'll start to see more information on that, of what comes of that. Nancy Pelosi in her visit to Ukraine to Kiev, to Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, is saying, you know, United States is behind you. We're going to do whatever we need. And that's the key point for us here in the United States, is what does that mean? And this week there will be discussions on again, we talked about it, the $33 billion that they want to fund to the Ukrainian military, government, whoever, for a host of military, humanitarian aid, and et cetera, other reasons that are questionable. And I bogged down on this. There's a good question posed by Joel Pollack of Breitbart News, and he asked the question of, before Congress does anything, they have to ask themselves and ask President Biden, is what is the end goal? And why is the administration not pursuing negotiations to end the war? Because the Ukrainians still seem to have the upper hand. Now, part of that is because the stance that they can't do that is because, as far as Congress and even the Biden administration can't do that, is because Biden's come out against Putin and, you know, calling him a war criminal and all this stuff. And so he's kind of he's destroyed the bridge of negotiation, that there is even a possibility of that. But the question still has to remain for Congress and the Senate. As this week, it'll be the Senate, because Congress is still out on recess, of what to do and how to fund this, and should you fund this. And again, there's the debate of either tying or separating the funding for COVID relief, extra COVID relief for future pandemics, and this Ukrainian aid. So it would be upwards of $53 billion in total. It's $33 billion for Ukrainian aid from the United States, extra on top of the $14 billion that we've already sent, and then $20 billion for future COVID relief to give to Fauci, the CDC, NIH, FDA, whoever supposedly needs it. And so there's a host of issues there. There's debate from right and left of whether it needs to be combined or separated. Chuck Schumer, who is leading the Senate right now, his majority, saying that he wants it tied together because he knows that it will be harder to pass the COVID aid alone. So he's going to tie both aids together. So that's the issue there with Ukraine and a little bit about our budget moving forward. But what's interesting is that out of Germany, I want to pull this story up, because whether people like Trump or didn't like Trump, Trump was right about a lot of things involving the EU's relationship with Russia, with oil and gas. And it has now come out that Germany says it will make, it is planning on making moves. We talked a little bit about this last week, of cutting its reliance on Russian crude oil. And they're giving a timeline of hopefully by the summer. Now, that's very interesting, because in order for them to cut reliance upon Russian oil and gas, they need ports in their border to be able to receive, especially natural gas. They need American LNG ports. Well, and that was one of the things that Germany, France, and Spain ended up cutting projects that would have finished by now, or at least been closer to finishing in certain areas, that would allow them to be able to receive American natural gas via these LNG ports. And part of this report, which is actually a really good report from the Epoch Times, talks about how in all of this, Germany itself is looking at going back to finishing. Germany plans to speed up the construction of terminals for liquefied natural gas, or LNG, but noted that this requires an enormous joint effort from construction, government, everybody, and that would ultimately cost the economy, and that would incur a cost that the economy and consumers would feel, because they're going to have to pay for things at a higher price. This is a problem with a lot of the decisions that have been made recently, not only from the United States government, from governments around the world, is, oh no, things are fine now, we don't need to worry about that. But you can't make decisions now about how things are now. You have to make decisions now about how things might be in the future and protect yourselves from known risks that could occur. You can't, scripture clearly tells you can't predict the future. Even with sometimes, you know, you can hear from the Lord. These people aren't listening to the Lord, number one. So if they're going to go by natural principles, they need to, okay, how do we prepare ourselves for the future? Well, they ignored all the signs, and Trump was right about all this stuff, and he bashed them for it. And, oh, he was evil. He was trying to ruin NATO and all this stuff. While he might have been doing that, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but he was trying to prepare Germany for these scenarios. And so with this, let's take what Germany's response is here with Russia, the issues going on in Ukraine, and pray for our administration and Congress and Senate to have the wisdom and fear of the Lord when dealing with Russia and China and Ukraine, because they're making steps that are inciting a potential war with Russia. And that is very alarming, because Russia is saying we are going to use nuclear weapons. And Biden has said in Poland, he's the one who started this, of if Russia attacks, we are going to respond in kind. So if Russia escalates to nuclear war, nuclear weapons, what will our military do? What will our administration do? Do we send troops on the ground? Do we do nuclear weapons? What does that mean? So there hasn't been a plan outlined, and we're going to pray for wisdom there, even if they have to walk back that statement from the president. And they've tried to, but he's been kind of hardline on it. And we've all seen how that worked out under the Obama administration of putting red lines in place. So something we really need to pray for the administration and other government officials who have a sway in what could happen, even with the funding. We really need to look at, okay, of this $14 billion that we've given, what has happened to it? Who has it gone to? And again, there's reports. Lance Wallnau has done a good job of this, of showing that there are Ukrainian officials just walking out of the country with bags full of cash. Why? I mean, and you want more money? That's an issue there. And then I want to give an update in China. The Chinese Communist Party locks down the world's largest wholesale hub because of COVID outbreak for their zero COVID policies. And the rumor is that that will potentially increase basically small goods, commodities, toys and things of that nature. I haven't really seen any reports that talk about how food will be slowed down if there's any that is coming from China, but it is Christmas merchandise and things like that, which, okay, this may not seem like that big of an issue, but it cogs down the whole supply chain logistics issue even more. So things and ships are going to be docked in ports, materials and companies are going to be locked up because they're not going to be able to get their people out, et cetera, move in and out of that region of China into the rest of the world. And look, this affects the world because, unfortunately, the world is a global economy, and we're seeing the downfalls of that. And again, one of the things that were looked at and shown to not be wise, and even during the pandemic, we're seeing that. So that's why we want to pray for China as well and our relationships there. And then a little bit about an update coming out of the Senate is that Democratic New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez talked about how what's going on at the southern border is not a Title 42 issue, because ultimately he's calling Title 42 a problem, because if you take these people and you fly them back to their home countries, there's nothing that prevents them from trying to come back again. And while he's right there, there are actually laws in the book that do deal with that. But again, the issue goes back to upholding the laws in the book. And he wants to, and other Democrats want to, pass immigration reform, quote unquote. This has always been their issue, of passing immigration reform, which means what? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, it would be putting another law on the books, putting another alphabet soup out there to potentially deal with a issue that should already be dealt with if you just upheld the laws at the border to begin with. And so this is a going to be a thing of contention. And again, Republicans trying to fight for Title 42 is a mistake. Fight for Remain in Mexico. Fight for border funding. Fight for those things. That's a very easy platform to stand for and a policy to uphold, because that, number one, remaining Mexico, when it has been tried, not only under President Trump, but under Bush and before, it prevents people from even coming to the border. And right now there are facilities in Mexico that are packed full of people waiting till the end of May to cross the border. Some estimates have been 8,000. There have been other Senators come out and say upwards of 30,000 a day at certain blocks in that are known. These are known people trying to cross the border, not unknown. And so there's an alarming issue there. So we want to pray for an intercede for wise leadership to surround President Biden and advise him on securing our southern border. And really for people to see in this season that what is being tried currently right now does not work and is causing problems. And that leads into some things being discussed about the whole disinformation board from Alejandro Mayorkas. And this weekend, he came out on CNN, and I'm going to play this a little bit faster because it's about a two-minute clip. He was asked on CNN about what his thoughts were in response to what really sane people are understanding what is happening with the narrative around the disinformation board. And listen to this question, and then there's another clip after this that I want to play as well, because his answers are just baffling. Just completely baffling about him saying, we're not going to spy on American citizens.
Let's talk about a different topic, which is what you are calling, your department is calling, the Disinformation Governance Board. You unveiled that this week. Republicans are calling it Orwellian and comparing it to the Ministry of Truth in the novel 1984. Can you clarify what exactly is this? What exactly will this Disinformation Governance Board do? Will it monitor American citizens?
So this is obviously a teed up question. He understood the reason he would go on CNN is because getting backlash. You're getting hammered over the head on Twitter over all this stuff because of who, and rightfully so, of who they're putting up. And I'll read something about that person here in a second. But here's his answer.
I'm very pleased to do so. It's clear. I mean, those criticisms are precisely the opposite of what this small working group within the Department of Homeland Security will do. And I think we probably could have done a better job of communicating what it does and does not do. So the fact is that disinformation,
and here's what he says,
creates a threat to the security of the homeland is our responsibility to address. And this department has been addressing it for years, throughout the years of the prior administration.
Correct. Through NSA, the Patriot Act, the whole Edward Snowden issue, very alarming stuff. And he says, oh yeah, we're going to do more of that.
Administration and an ongoing basis. Disinformation from Russia,
right,
China.
We know the problems, but it's...
So if you're already dealing with it, why do you need another board to supposedly deal with something you're already dealing with? That would be a question I have.
Still not clear to me how this governance board will act. What will it do?
So what it does is...
And that's a good question. What will it do? It's obviously a softball question.
That the way in which we address threats, the connectivity between threats and acts of violence are addressed without infringing on free speech.
And see, this is them. What this will be doing is them trying to predict what certain things mean. Not any actions. Basically, hate speech. Not freedom of speech, hate speech. There's something that they deem as an international matter or disinformation, Russia. This can be from Russia. Again, the whole narrative around Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian information, disinformation.
Protecting civil rights and civil liberties, the right of privacy. And the board...
That right there is very alarming. We're going to protect the right of privacy. No, you're actually doing the exact opposite with creating this board.
This working group, internal working group, will draw from best practices and communicate those best practices to the operators because the board does not have operational authority.
Will America...
Currently, they don't.
Can citizens be monitored?
No.
Guarantee that.
So what we do, we in the Department of Homeland...
He didn't answer that question. Do you guarantee that? He answered before she said, do you guarantee that? And then he brushed right past it. Because let's go back. Watch his look
because
at
the
it.
Board does not have operational authority.
Will American citizens be monitored?
No.
He's looking down when he says
what
that
we
answer.
Do, we in the Department That's of Homeland alarming. Security don't monitor American citizens.
You don't, but
you don't, supposedly. But there are programs out there that do. And if you ever want to go access it, and this is what Edward Snowden pointed
does
out.
Does board change that?
No. The board does not have any operational authority or capability. What it will do is gather together best practices in addressing the threat of disinformation from foreign state adversaries, from the cartels, and disseminate those best practices to the operators that have been executing in addressing this threat for years.
You don't need that. You have the DEA. You have other avenues to be able to handle that. It's very alarming to see what he's saying there. And then there's this other clip that I want to play. When she asks him directly, is the person who they have chosen nonpartisan? And his response is, I think, very naive and misinformed on this whole matter. And so while I – let me pull this up, and I want to play this. It's shocking that he thinks that this is the this is the place, and I think he truly believes this. Let's listen.
Republicans are criticizing your decision, the administration's decision to choose Nina Jankowicz to lead this disinformation board. They say she is not somebody who is neutral. Your response?
Eminently qualified, a renowned expert in the field of disinformation. Absolutely so.
He believes she is absolutely neutral. I mean, she even comes out and mocks Kamala Harris, but the fact that he even can consider her to be neutral is a joke. And understand this. She is – I'm going to pull this report. I wasn't going to talk about this, but I think it's becoming more and more relevant as to why we should look at this. This is a statement from Jen Psaki when asked about her, saying that she is an online expert, Nina Jankowicz. She was formerly in the Wilson Center of Disinformia. She was formerly a disinformation fellow at the Wilson Center, Woodrow Wilson Center, which is not something to be a nonpartisan actor who would be a part of. She's been a part of other organizations that are very partisan, to say the least. She's been involved with advising Ukrainian foreign ministers, other officials who have known to be corrupt. And because she's testified before Congress and the United Kingdom European Parliament as a disinformation expert, that this is why we deem her as safe and someone who is. Her history is very, very alarming. We've played the clips, just the things she has said. And because she has supposedly come out and said, and she really has said, is that the government should not get involved in the literally thing that she wants to get involved in the government for, of controlling free speech. And so the question needs to be asked from politicians is, what authority does Department of Homeland have to be able to do this? Again, this reveals a broader question dealing with NSA spying, the FBI spying, which have already started to happen. And yet you're saying you're going to do more of that. Oh, you need to learn. And basically what they're doing is what it sounds like Mayorkas is saying is, well, they don't know how to do it right yet. So we're going to show them how. And it's completely partisan from the Biden administration. So very alarming, something to watch there. And then this week we will have just kind of to round down. The Federal Reserve is meeting Tuesday or today and tomorrow, and they're going to announce their plans for increasing federal interest rates, which are, again, talked about slow rolling, and they're going to eventually – their goal is to try to get ahead of inflation, get inflation back down to 2%. But the issue at play here is the fact that 50 basis points, basically 0.5%, is a very, very slow rolling rate to be able to do that. There are other issues with the economy. They think, and then there this week, unemployment numbers will come out. Other economic factors will come out. But at the end of the day, they're the reality of the quote unquote 3.5% unemployment is a joke. And there's a line from an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about this, about how economists will be watching for signs that more people are joining the workforce, potentially easing wage pressures. And because there's not enough people in the market force, supposedly seeking jobs, that they're having to raise rates to get people to come back to work. There's other issues around that, but the very fact that this line would be considered, and this is something economists are looking at, shows that the overall wage labor pool number is false. And other economists are understanding of this, and that's why I say the unemployment numbers are false. CPI is false because they're leaving out big things. And then the last thing I want to close with is, there's reports and there's questions about Dinesh D'Souza's 2000 Mules film, in that it has the evidence that people have been asking for, and I think rightfully so. But the big question is, can it get a hearing in front of a judge to have what happened be looked at? And Georgia's going about it in a certain way, but there's other parts of the country that it is possibly occurring. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, who's going to look at this? How do they present it? Will it get a hearing? And so the uncovering is starting to occur, but will it happen everywhere? We want to pray that it does, but also at the same time, as we get closer every day towards the midterms happening, preliminaries especially, this week and coming up in the next coming weeks, will people be aware enough, and are we involved enough to prevent the same questions from arising again, even in this election, even with the integrity laws and all that stuff? Is it enough? We're gonna find out. And so the evidence is out there. So just sit there and say, well, there is no evidence of it. Well, okay, what about this? You don't have to say that it is 100% true. Say, what about this? Will somebody look at this? Will somebody do that? Stay neutral there. Keep our emotions in check. And so I want to close on that. We have a lot to look forward to this week, a lot to pray for as we have now entered into the month of ER and the month of May. And if you ever thought a time to be, this is a time, not a time to be alive, and it's boring, just watch the news. It's better than any reality TV out there right now. And so I want to close with that. Thank you to everyone if you're following along with me today. Again, I'll put this on podcast, put the links to the articles that I'm finding my news sources from and gathering this information. And we'll be back today with our noon prayer online only, praying and standing for God's will for this nation and the office of the president. So blessings, and I will see you guys later. Have a good one.